Matthew chapter 16. We'll read verses 13 through verse 16. Matthew 16, verses 13 through verse 16. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremias, or one of the prophets." He saith unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." What we read here involves Jesus and his disciples. The term "his disciples" is found in verse 13, verse 21, and verse 24. And it continues through verse 28. In our text, Jesus is addressing his disciples, and he's addressing them upon the subject of his person, who he is. And this is in preparation for what would be an extremely difficult and trying time that was just on the horizon for the disciples. What he says here in our text is in preparation to that which would prove to be a very great trial and challenge to their faith. Because if you drop down to verse 21, "From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and raised again the third day." So troubling times were coming for these disciples. Leading up to this point, for 2+ years, Jesus has been teaching and reteaching, affirming and reaffirming, establishing and reestablishing, building and rebuilding the confidence and commitment of these disciples toward Christ. Again, what we read here in our text, Jesus is declaring, is addressing his disciples concerning his person, more importantly, their perception of his person. He does this by asking 2 questions. "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And more importantly, "but," implying and assuming that their perception of Christ would be different than that of others. "But whom say ye that I am?" In other words, who is Jesus Christ, or who am I to you, is what he's asking. What is your perception of who I am? "But whom say ye that I am?" This is a question of monumental importance. Our eternal destiny hinges upon the answer to that question. The life that you and I, his children of God, are going to live hinges upon the answer, the honest answer to that question. He asked this question by way of introduction to the subject of a life lived for him. He describes that life in verse 24. "Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." So what he says in our text, the question that he asks in our text, leads up to living this life that is described in verse 24. So I want to speak this evening on our perception of Christ. In verse 24, we see that we are called to live a very particular life. Again, difficult and trying days were ahead for these disciples. And Christ, in verse 24, is calling upon them to live a thorough and across-the-board life for Him. A life that would be all-encompassing. One that would affect their entire being. This life would require five things. First of all, the will would have to be engaged toward Christ. He said in verse 24, if any man will. He's talking to his disciples, talking to the saved. If any man will. That speaks of personal desire. It conveys the idea of personal determination, personal resolve, personal aspiration, a personal longing, a personal yearning, an eagerness, an enthusiasm. Concerning this will, notice, if any man will come after me. Come after me. That speaks of a single-mindedness. That speaks of a firmness of the will. In other words, there must be a purpose of will toward Jesus Christ. If we are going to live this all-encompassing life for Christ, there must be a purpose of will to do so. And this must be stronger than any other desire that we have if we're going to live this life. From Luke chapter 9, verses 57 through 60, we'll not turn there for time's sake, but we learn that this desire of will must take priority over all the events of life. And we learn from Luke chapter 14 and verse 26 that this desire of will takes priority over all the relationships of life. The life that we are called to live requires a will engaged toward Christ. It also requires an attraction to Jesus Christ. Notice again, if any man will come after me, and follow me. The words after and the word follow speak of a pursuit. And the word me, of course, speaks of Christ, and he's the object of the pursuit. He's the object of attraction that causes us to pursue. So the life that we are called to live is a life of such appreciation and such enjoyment of Christ that our hearts and our minds are obsessed with Him, that our hearts and our minds are pulled toward Him, drawn toward Him. So the life that we are required to live requires that our will be engaged toward Christ. It requires that we have an attraction to Jesus Christ. And again, this takes priority over everything else. Thirdly, we see that there is a denial of self. If any man will come after me, let him. Let him, the one who has this desire, the one who has this attraction for Christ, let him desire or let him deny himself. In other words, desire and attraction toward Christ are not enough to live this life that we are required to live. But the desire and the attraction for Christ has to be so great, has to be so powerful and so influential that it causes us to deny ourselves. This simply means that there is an opposing of ourselves, a refusal of ourselves, a dismissal of ourselves, a renouncing and a rejecting of ourselves in favor of Him, Jesus Christ. That's the only way we can live this life, in verse 24. So the desire, the resolve, the determination, the yearning, the longing, the eagerness, the attraction to Christ, must be greater than self. It's got to be greater than self. The life that we are called to live is a life renouncing the right to our own life. It means that we give ourselves over to Him to be molded, to be shaped, to be trained, to be taught, to be transformed and conformed to His image. This life also requires, fourthly, a realization that He is worthy of everything. Notice again verse 24, and. It's a connecting word. Connecting word to the denial of self, in addition to the denial of self. And there's an order here. We have to deny ourselves before we're going to do this next thing. Take up. That's voluntarily. It's something we do on purpose. You take something up, you pick something up, you do so voluntarily, and you do so with purpose and intent. Take up His cross. Take up His cross. And as we've said before, this cross here is the expression of the world's hatred for Jesus Christ. If we are going to live the life that we are called to live, there must be a willingness, and this follows the denial of self, there must be a willingness to be hated, to be ridiculed, to be mocked, to be rejected, and thought to be the scum of the earth, all for the cause of Jesus Christ. The cross that we are to voluntarily take up speaks of surrender, speaks of submission to the will of God, without any reserve, unto death. We are to be willing to die on that cross, giving all for His glory. We are to be willing to go all the way for Jesus Christ. The life also that we are called to live requires, fifthly, that it be lived out completely for Him. Notice again verse 24. And realizing that He is worthy of all, follow Me. Follow Me. That's a life lived out for Him. Follow Me. It is indicative of a life of serving Him, a life separated unto Him, a life with Him being the priority, with Him being the emphasis. Follow Him. Follow Me. There is a call here to imitate, to obey, and to commit ourselves to Him, leaning upon Him, depending upon Him. It is a call to be identified with Him in everything that we do, everywhere we go, everything. We are to be identified with Him. To follow Him means to experience Him in our lives. So the life that we are called to live is a life of steadily and humbly following His footsteps through the world. So the life described in verse 24, which is the life that we are called to live, which is the life that we are responsible to live, is anything but shallow. You read verse 24 and you read it again and again and again. There's nothing shallow there. There's nothing superficial in verse 24. It is a life of personal compulsion. It is a life of obsession. It is a life of fixation upon Jesus Christ. It is a life fully impacted by Jesus Christ. Now all of that leads us back to our text, which is the foundation of this life. Again, in our text, Christ addresses His disciples concerning their perception of Himself. And the verses that we read are the introduction, the foundation, the footing, if you will, of the life that we are called to live, which is again described in verse 24. In asking the first question, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? Christ knew what their answer would be, and their answer is recorded in verse 14. And you see, there were various opinions concerning who Jesus was. The point that is being made here is that the world merely speculates about Jesus Christ. Well, I think he's John the Baptist. Well, I think he's Jeremiah. Well, I think he's one of the other prophets. It's just mere speculation about Jesus Christ. And you'll notice in their speculation, John the Baptist, Elias, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets, in all their speculation, they make Christ less than who he really is. John the Baptist is less than Jesus. Jeremiah, Elias, all the prophets are less than who he is. All the world's speculation is less than who and what Jesus is. And you also notice in their speculation there in verse 14, none of those conjectures concerning Jesus Christ would have a life-changing impact upon them. None of them. Well, I think he's John the Baptist. That doesn't impact your life. I think he's one of the other prophets. I think he's a great man. That doesn't have any impact upon your life. That doesn't have any impact on the life that you are going to live. We need to be sure of this. One will not live the life described in verse 24 without there being a life-changing perception of Jesus Christ. Without this life-changing perception of Jesus Christ, we will never live verse 24. Never. And therein lies the problem today. He then asked a second question. Verse 15. He asked this question knowing that they would not have the same thoughts as the world. But whom say ye that I am? Peter, as he often does, acts as the spokesman for the rest, and he answers in verse 16. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. That's quite different than thou art John the Baptist. Thou art Elias. Thou art one of the other prophets. He says, thou art the Christ, the promised one, the promised Messiah, the Son of God, God Himself. You are God, is what Peter is saying. And then knowing the answer that Peter gives here, manifests, notice again, thou art the Christ. It's not we think that you are the Christ. It's not even we believe that you are the Christ. Thou art Christ, the Son of God. What he said concerning Christ, he said with great assurance. He said with certainty. He said with conviction, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. So his perception of the person of Christ was one of certainty and was one of conviction. You and I will never live, verse 24, without this conviction concerning the person of Christ. The life that we are called to live requires a personal assurance, a personal conviction, a personal realization of who and what Christ really is. And then notice verse 17. And Jesus answered and said unto him in the hearing of all the disciples, blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee. You see, the answer of verse 14, some say that thou art John the Baptist, others Elias, others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. That is the reasoning of flesh and blood. But he tells Peter, what you have said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. That's not of flesh and blood, but the Father, which is in heaven. The opinions, the beliefs, the thinking, the notions, the ideas concerning Christ are numerous in the world. But the question that must seize our hearts if we're going to live the life that we're called to live in verse 24 is, what is my perception of Jesus Christ? May I say that my perception of Christ doesn't change who He is. Whatever you think of Christ, whatever I think of Christ, does not change who He is. But it does change the way we live. So we need to ask, that question needs to get a hold of our hearts. What is my perception of Jesus Christ? And really, we can answer that question. We do answer that question by the life that we live. Is our perception of Christ one that makes an impact upon our life? Does it change who we are? Does it change the way we live? Remember, Pilate asked in Matthew 27, 22, what shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? Well, that's another question we have to answer. And the truth is, what we do with Christ depends upon, but whom say ye that I am? Every day we must do something with Jesus Christ. It is absolutely imperative that we have a recognition and awareness and appreciation, a firm grasp upon the person of Jesus Christ. Sadly, many of God's people, and we all are very prone to forget, Christianity is all about Christ. It's all about Christ. And that's why he begins this conversation with his person, leading up to the life that they were to live. We must have a life-changing perception of Christ, a perception of Christ that fills our hearts with wonder. It must be as Paul said in Colossians 3 and verse 11, Christ is all. That must be our perception. Christ is everything. Christ is all. That has to be our perception if we're going to live, verse 24. Christ is all. In order to live the life described in verse 24, we must have such a perception of Christ that it fills us with wonder. Matthew chapter 8, the apostles are in a boat, they are caught in a storm, and Jesus, we know, is asleep. The apostles are overcome with fear. They awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. Jesus stood up, spoke to the wind, and there was a great calm. The result, there in Matthew 8, verse 27, the men marveled, saying, what manner of man is this? That is, they looked at Christ and they were overcome with amazement. And they were in awe of Him. And oh, what a hindrance it is and what a detriment it is to the life that we're called to live when we lose our sense of amazement and wonder concerning who He is. When we lose our awe of Jesus Christ, we cease to live. Verse 24. When we lose our awe of Christ, we lose our zeal. We lose our passion. We become cold. We become indifferent. We become mechanical. If we're going to live verse 24, we cannot afford to lose our wonder and our fascination of Jesus Christ. That's why every day we need to see Him. We need to see Him. We need to spend time with Him. We read in Luke chapter 2, verse 19, that after the shepherds visited the newborn Christ and had told of what had transpired in the field that night while they were tending the sheep, the heavenly announcement of the birth, we read that Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And oh, how often we review and reflect upon the wrong things in our hearts. We need to review and reflect in our hearts upon the person of Jesus Christ, upon who He is. And that fills our hearts with wonder. And the result of that is we begin to live. Verse 24. We read in 1 Peter 2 and verse 7, "Unto you therefore which believe, He is precious." The word precious means that He's cherished. It means that He's dear, He's esteemed, He's loved, He's adored. Christ being precious to us, that must never wane. If it begins to wane, we fail to live the life of verse 24. And how many of God's people have lost their wonder of Christ? We've all been there one time or another. This was the problem with the church at Ephesus. Revelation 2, verse 4, "Thou hast left thy first love." It does not say that they ceased to love Christ. That's not what it says. It says they left their first love. And I believe he's talking there about a kind of love. There was a kind of love that ceased to be. And because of that, there was many, many problems. You see, first love is fervent. First love boils over. It's a feeling. It's an emotion. Beyond description. They lost that. They lost that. First love is without reservation. That first love, you'll do anything. Anything. Doesn't matter what it is. It knows no reservation. First love is very real. It's filled with excitement. It's filled with enthusiasm. It's void of self-interest. They lost that. And that's when we lose that, that's where we fail in verse 24. Again, our text is the foundation of verse 24. That first love had a very strong drawing effect upon our hearts. It was a love that moved our souls. It was a love that thrilled us. It was a love that controlled us. It was a love that made us ready to do whatever He commanded. It was a love that filled our life with meaning, and that fills our life with meaning. It's a love of priority. It's a love that gives life meaning. It's a love that simply means that we had eyes for no one else but Him. First love. First love. He was the only one. That's foundational to living. Verse 24. That kind of love for Christ that fills us with wonder about His person inspires us to pray. Inspires us to praise Him and thank Him. It is that first love that fills us with wonder that causes our hearts to be tender toward Him. It is first love that makes His Word so special. If the Word of God is not special, it's because we lack in our perception of Jesus Christ. It is that love for Jesus Christ that makes His Word special, His day special, His people special, His church special, and on we can go. It was first love that made worship so real and produced unquestioning faith and obedience. It's that first love that causes us to realize that there's no such thing as too holy. There's no such thing as being too consecrated. No such thing. It is first love that causes us to realize we cannot do enough in His service. You see, first love causes us to realize that if we do everything that verse 24 mentions, we're still unprofitable servants. When Christ said, "Thou hast left thy first love," to the church of Ephesus, He was saying that they no longer had a proper perception of Jesus Christ. What He's basically saying is the wonder is gone. The wonder is gone. When we lose that wonder, we're in a heap of trouble. We're in a lot of trouble. That is where we fail to live this life that we are called to live. So if we're going to live verse 24, we must have a perception of Christ that fills us with wonder. In order to live this life, in order to have a will engaged toward Christ, in order to have an attraction to Christ, in order to deny ourselves, in order to realize that He is worthy of everything, and in order to live life completely for Him, it all goes back. But whom say ye that I am? It all goes back to our perception of Jesus Christ. And I believe to a large degree we have lost sight of that very, very basic truth. And when I say we, I'm just speaking of Christianity as a whole. If a child of God ceases to live the life that we're called to live, the solution is that we need a recognition and awareness of Christ to be rekindled. That'll fix it all. When we recognize who He is, and when we're fully aware of who He is, verse 24 just takes place. So when we fail in verse 24, we need to get our eyes back on Christ. We need to get our eyes upon Him. And that rekindles the wonder. That rekindles the desire. What many do, they fail, they stop going to church, they get to thinking, I've got to get right. So what do? They come back to church. Does that get them right? No. That doesn't make them right. Doesn't make them right at all. I mean, it's better than staying away. But that's not what makes them right. And they come a service or two, and then they go back to where they were. And their attitude is almost like, well, I tried and it didn't work. You see, the solution is you need to get your eyes back on Christ. That wonder needs to be rekindled. And only God can do that. Again, flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. When we begin to feel ourselves drifting, begin to feel ourselves becoming detached from Jesus Christ, we begin to feel the zeal is disappearing, we need to pray, oh God, show me yourself. Show me Jesus. Make him plain to me. Because that's where the wonder is. The wonder's not in us. The wonder's not in any other child of God. We have to have a proper perception of Jesus Christ. This is the way we need to train our children as well. We need to encourage them. You need to look to Jesus. That's why the writer of Hebrews in Hebrews 12, looking unto Jesus. That's where we find, that's where the wonder is rekindled. That's where it's rekindled. It's not rekindled by putting someone in the choir or giving them a Sunday school class. That's not what rekindles the wonder. What rekindles the wonder is getting our eyes back on Jesus Christ. So may that be our prayer. When we feel ourselves beginning to wane, oh Lord, cause me to see yourself. Need to see Jesus. Need to open God's Word and pray that God would show us His Son. God would restore the wonder. We can encourage one another. We can encourage those who have slipped away, try to encourage them to get back in the service of God. But I'm here to tell you, if the wonder isn't restored, it's not going to amount to much. The wonder of Jesus is the foundation of true service. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry will lead us in singing.